On this 22nd day of June, 2011, in San Diego, California, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Chapter 2, entitled Contents of the Gita Summarized, text number 57, 257. Yasavatrana bisnehas tat-tat prapya shubhashubham nabhinandati nadveshti tasya prajna pratishthita. In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. Purport. There is always some upheaval in the material world, which may be good or evil. One who is not agitated by such material upheavals, who is unaffected by good and evil, is to be understood to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one is in the material world, there is always the possibility of good and evil, because this world is full of duality. But one who is fixed in Krishna consciousness is not affected by good and evil, because he is simply concerned with Krishna, who is all good absolute. Such consciousness in Krishna situates one in a perfect transcendental position called, technically, samadhi. Om jnana tamarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chukshu unmiditam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So there's kind of a double meaning going on in here. If you look at the synonyms, the word anabhisneha, without affection. Now, in the normal course of how we speak, affection means to like something, to like someone, have some affection for them, or it, right? But there's also this meaning, as Prabhupada gives it here, and it appears both in the translation and in the purport, of being affected by. So he took the anabhisneha to be without being affected by something, and that's what found its way into the translation of purport, and that, of course, is perfect. But we can also understand that Krishna is saying, in all cases, sarvatra means everywhere, don't have too much affection for anything in this material world, because that affection is just another way of saying attraction. And attraction, as we know, are like ropes that bind us to this world. So our affection, our love, attraction, is meant for Krishna. Now, it's also meant for Krishna's devotees and anything related to Krishna. So that's, we have to understand the idea. Krishna is talking about material things. Don't get too entangled in this material world. It's as simple as that. And then he gives examples of how, you know, the duality of this world is how we become affected, or how we become attached. Now, the flip side of attachment is repulsion. And he mentions that here also. Dveshti, not dveshti. Don't become abhinandati. Don't praise it. And don't rile against the evil, you know. So much energy is wasted complaining. I mean, it's a world of complaining. There's a whole victim culture. If one can somehow get oneself into a state where he's regarded as a victim, it's very good. You know, people will feel sorry for you. They'll pay you. All kinds of things will happen. And so we have people joining together and insisting that they've been victimized by this world, by this, by my, you know, parents, therefore I'm not responsible for what I've done, you know. So this is a world of complaints. But Krishna conscious devotees are not meant to be in that state, because this that simply agitates the mind. Both sides, the too much attachment and too much repulsion. It's just two sides of the same coin. And so you constantly see that in the Bhagavad Gita. Be equipoised. You know, matra sparsha tukantaya, right at the beginning of instructions. The fourth verse that he instructs. What is it? 2:14 is about tolerance. This is a world of dualities. You're going along kind of smoothly and all, and then something horrific happens to you. You know, unexpected, seemingly from out of the blue. We know from the philosophy that there's karma is suddenly coming due. But the whole idea in Krishna consciousness is to develop one's ballast or gyroscope, if you will, like a steady inner consciousness of Krishna that can never be shaken, and that keeps you on a steady course no matter what happens, because there are going to be upheavals in this material world. This is a famous line, by the way. There is always some upheaval in the material world, and who can deny it? I mean, everybody's life has had some upheaval, and are we not conscious of so many out there? I mean, as I speak, and on any given day, right now, there's like these huge floods happening in the Mississippi. You know, never happened before. The tsunami happened. Everyone knows about that. You know, we had an earthquake here. It was just like a couple hundred miles away in Mexico that everyone felt. If it had been like 100 miles closer, you know, who knows what would have happened, you know? So there are these constant upheavals, and if one is always dwelling on them, then there's always an agitated state of mind. So the theme is pragya pratishtita, that consciousness or that intelligence, that buddhi that's fixed, that has the inner atmanevatmanatushta. This is the first verse in the series, text 56. One who is satisfied within by the self. And of course, we know that the self alone, you know, the Atma, cannot be satisfied. The Atma becomes satisfied in contact with the Supreme Atma, with Krishna. And that gives you a tremendous amount of steadiness in your life. You can't be shaken. One of the qualities described in the sixth chapter by Krishna in the Samadhi, after all, he's talking about Samadhi, fixed consciousness, is that in any circumstance, no matter how bad it can be, and how bad can it get? Disease, old age, and death, you know, you remain fixed. You remain fixed on Krishna. You remain fixed on the Absolute Truth. Your mind is not disturbed. Because after all, we always have to remember, it's the mind that is going to determine our destiny. You know, that at the time of death, the mind filled with thoughts of sense gratification or fear or horror or, you know, whatever, that's going to take us to a next body. And we go around again in a certain term, and that's not what we want to do. So the mind needs to be trained between now and that point, or say between now and the next trauma that we experience, it may come before death, so that we're able to keep our equilibrium. You know, we may roll with the punches, kind of. It's not we don't, you know, react, but we're not overwhelmed. You know, overwhelmed means that so many people in this world, you know, PTSD is post-traumatic stress, or just growing up in this world. And they internalize it, and there's a steady state of anxiety for which they need pills just to sleep or get up in the morning and deal with it. Huge number of people. It's such a troubling world. It's much worse than when I grew up. There's so much more happening, and you know so much more. I mean, some horrible thing happens to a kid in Indonesia, and you read about it on the internet, and it disturbs your mind. What can you do about it? It's happening all the time. It always used to happen, but you didn't know about it. But now you can know about it. And if you allow that to enter into your mind, you know, it can be so disturbing. What to speak of the actual things that happen to you? So here, you know, the instruction is given, and it's being given again and again. Not too much affection for these things. Direct yourself, direct your affection toward Krishna, toward Krishna's devotees, everything in relation to Krishna. And auspicious and inauspicious things happen. There's a parallel thing here. Tattva prapya shubha, then nabhinandanti. And prapya ashubham, if you attain something evil or dangerous or frightening, nadveshti. You don't internalize it and become bear a grudge for the rest of your life. You know, people do that. It completely cuts off your, chokes off your bhakti creeper. Remember, we're trying to water this creeper. It's a very nice analogy. Metaphor given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 19th chapter, Madhya Lila, highly recommended. It's the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Sri Rupa Goswami. And he talks about how all of us, we're wandering through the Brahmandas. Brahmanda means literally Brahma's egg. This whole universe is like an egg, because it's like has a hard shell, you know, a big, thick shell, actually. And there's some space in between, and there's water in there, where Garbhodakshaya Vishnu was resting, you know. And there, and all of the planets are existing one above another in that space above the water. So it's described as Brahma's egg, or Brahmanda. So he says, Brahmanda, Brahmite, Kon, Bhagyavan Jeev. Brahmite means wandering. Different planets, different species, different situations. We've been doing this who knows how long. Millions of lifetimes. So Brahmanda may Kon, Bhagyavan Jeev, the fortunate Jiva, or soul, after all his wanderings, Krishna, Guru, Prasade, Pai, Bhakti, Lata, Beej. By the mercy or grace of Krishna and the Guru, he or she, if you will, attains the seed of the creeper of devotion. Now, what is that seed? This is the seed. The seed is the instructions. The seed is the holy name, you see? And then, so it's planted in the heart. Then we have the responsibility to water that seed so that the creeper starts to grow and ultimately produces the fruit, which is pure love of God. And it's very detailed how he describes how that creeper, the main watering process is. Anyone know? Hearing and chanting. Hearing and chanting. If you study the process of bhakti that we practice, it's centered on hearing and chanting. Everything else we do is meant to be accompanied by that. Jiva Goswami mentions that. Deity worship. You know, deity worship is a separate category amongst the nine. Archan, right? Shavanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam. Says, okay, that's Archanam, then there's also Shravanam Kirtanam. But Archanam, or deity worship, is meant to be accompanied by hearing and chanting. Anyone who's done any deity worship, I used to do more, much more, I do practically nothing now. There's all kinds of mantras, all kinds of prayers, before, afterward, you know. Oh, you know, a whole set of mantras, to please forgive me for any discrepancies I may have made, you know. And while you're on the altar, there's all kinds of mantras for each deity has its own specific seed mantra, you know. It's very involved. It's all centered on hearing and chanting. So that's the main process. And by that hearing and chanting, hearing the holy name, chanting, and all the things we do, that creeper is watered. Now, what does it mean? It's a creeper. It's a creeper of desire. It's a creeper of aspiration. Now, Lord Chaitanya points out, we have many other upashaka. In other words, weeds. There's all kinds of weeds in there that we've been watering since time immemorial. Desires for this, desires for that. And there's also negative things. You know, hate and fear, you know, and all that stuff. That's also a creeper. You can cultivate that also. So it's all in the heart. But now there's this very auspicious creeper of bhakti called the bhakti lata. Bhakti lata. So by watering that creeper, chiefly by hearing and chanting, it starts to grow. Means that that desire becomes most prominent in our heart. But we have to also pull up the weeds. Those weeds come in the form of offenses. You know, we chant every morning these 10 offenses to the holy name. There's also a Vaishnav aparad, you know, means offending devotees. And the worst Vaishaparad, which is like compared to a mad elephant running around your garden, you know, knocking, pulling up your creeper, is the offense to the Mahabhagavat, the great devotees. But any devotees should be honored, respected, and not offended. What will be the result? I've seen this. I've seen it over my history, you know. This is a direct experience. Some devotee commits an offense. I'll never forget this experience. I used to be involved with the Bhakta program a little bit in L.A. in the 70s. There's still bhaktas who come and tell me, oh, thank you, I don't even remember them. They said, thank you. You told me how to chant Hare Krishna. Anyway, but there was one bhakta, he was doing nicely, and then he had some altercation with another devotee, and he got physical. You know, I don't know if he punched him or puts him up against the wall or something like that. And I didn't even know about it, but he came to me and he said, oh, Dravida, Prabhu, you know, somehow or other, I can't relish the chanting anymore, nothing, you know. I said, well, what happened? So he told me the story. He said, oh, well, that's why. You have to go to that devotee and beg his forgiveness, you know, and get from there. And then you'll be able to regain your taste, you know. But somehow or other, he couldn't bring himself to do that. You know, if you get too much into animus, you know, that you know, you, I mean, this is, I forget what it's like because I'll be absolutely honest to you. I don't hate anybody in this world. I'm very fortunate. But I know people who have had some financial dealings or some kind of offense, and it's so deep. To just see that person or hear their name, you know, the face turn. You know what I mean? This is what the karmas are going through, right? They can't stand that person. You know, this is what wars are built up of. You know, a whole tribe or group or state, you know, feels wronged. I remember in the early 90s, it's pertinent because he's talking about this. They had this war. Mahat can tell you all about it. May have been in it. The Serbs and the Croats, you remember in Bosnia? Remember that history? Oh, how horrific. You know, you'd read about the massacres and this and that. And what, you know, 500 years ago, the Muslims came in and they took over. Now we can get them back. You know, 500 years, they've nurtured that, you know, generation, the parampara of hate. You know what I mean? It's planting the seed in the children. Now you hate them. This is what they did, the history, you know. You know, and now we got our chance and they come out. This is sick. This is what material life is all about. So we can't let that grow. If by some accident or somehow or other we do commit an offense, we should take care of it because it can choke off. Please, take some seats and come over to the minister. Thank you. So this creeper is growing and you have this little garden. You know, just like Budvi is always trying to get us to take care of this garden. Don't wreck the plants. You know, Hare Krishna. Nice, thank you for coming. And so if it's very delicate, you have to fence it off. And you do that, you know, through good association and proper etiquette and all of these different things and avoiding the offenses. And then the creeper can grow nicely. And you're pulling out the weeds means that these other desires and other aspirations are falling by the wayside. So otherwise, and this is explained, that the very chanting that you're doing, if you're not careful to pull out those unwanted desires, will feed the unwanted desires. You know? This is what happens. So anyway, the very chanting that you're doing can feed those desires. If you maintain one, you maintain one illicit desire, and you're chanting, and you're practicing, then that becomes very strong. It becomes more difficult to stop, to undo that. Because scientifically, this is a very psychological process we're doing. The whole thing is psychological, right? This is Krishna consciousness. So we're awakening our what we call Ladini Shakti. This is the spiritual pleasure potency personified as Srimati Radharani. Whatever ecstasy or, you know, happiness you're feeling, jubilation in Krishna consciousness, and it comes, it may come in spurts, but we feel some of it. That's the blessing of Radharani. That's that Ladini Shakti, you know, which is the original Shakti of sense gratification. When Ladini Shakti is not directed toward Krishna, when our pleasure energy, we're trying to give Krishna pleasure, then we're feeling Ladini Shakti. As soon as we forget Krishna and we're trying to give these senses pleasure or our self pleasure, then that's sense gratification. It's the same pleasure energy in the contact with the modes of nature causes pain. That's called indriya priti, you know. So the point is that you're enjoying, you know. You're enjoying Krishna consciousness because you're doing nicely, but you're not careful. You're not vigilant about avoiding these offenses or uprooting the material desires. And so you start that you feed this other desire. So the idea is it's a science. That's why Krishna keeps saying sarvam all, you know. Don't leave any black spot on the white sheet, you know, of your heart. You're trying to purify. Don't leave any dirty corners. This is what he's talking about here. So this is one verse, and now he's going to go on and give a nice analogy with the tortoise. Unless there's any questions, we'll move on. There's a whole series of verses. They basically have the same theme. Yada sangharate chayam kumongani visarvishaha indriyan indriyartebhyas tasya pragyapatishtita. One who is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects, as the tortoise draws its limbs within the shell, is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. Purport. The test of a yogi, devotee, or self-realized soul is that he is able to control the senses according to his plan. Most people, however, are servants of the senses and are thus directed by the dictation of the senses. That is the answer to the question as to how the yogi is situated. Now, Prabhupada is referring back to Arjuna's question. Kim asita kim. I think that's it. How does he sit? How does he walk? How is he situated? Yeah. Stamadhi, stasi. Yeah, okay. So Krishna is systematically answering these questions. The senses are compared to venomous serpents. They want to act very loosely and without restriction. The yogi or the devotee must be very strong to control the serpents, like a snake charmer. He never allows them to act independently. There are many injunctions in the revealed scriptures. Some of them are do-nots, and some of them are do's. Unless one is able to follow the do's and the do-nots, restricting oneself from sense enjoyment, it is not possible to be firmly fixed in Krishna consciousness. The best example set herein is the tortoise. The tortoise can at any moment wind up its senses and exhibit them again at any time for particular purposes. Similarly, the senses of the Krishna conscious persons are used only for some particular purpose in the service of the Lord and are withdrawn otherwise. Arjuna is being taught here to use his senses for the service of the Lord instead of for his own satisfaction. Keeping the senses always in the service of the Lord is the example set by the analogy of the tortoise who keeps the senses within. So, when we use the senses in the service of Krishna, that's the definition of bhakti. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchate. This is by Rupa Goswami. He quotes this verse, I think. So, when you first begin Krishna consciousness, the senses are filled with so many desires. In other words, it's not just that the mind is filled with desires. The senses also can be saturated with kama, as explained at the end of the next chapter. And they need good engagement. As it says, the best defense is a good offense. You can't just stop the senses. This is more or less what the yogis try to do, you know, through brute force, through, first of all, separating yourself from the sense objects. That's why you go off into the forest, into the cave somewhere, so I won't be tempted, you know. And then, you know, by pranayama, by the sitting postures, by will of your mind, just bring the mind and put it on the Supreme, you know. But, of course, you have to eat something, you know, yeah, eventually. So you can't control, you have to have a way of eating spiritually, you know. And for us, that kind of practice is self-defeating. It's impossible. Even Arjuna rejects it in the sixth chapter. So this process of bhakti yoga, if you think about it and read about it, it engages all the senses. Just think about what an artik is, nice kirtan that we have, you know. So first of all, the eyes are engaged. There's the beautiful form of the Lord, right? So beauty is by nature attractive. So when you're seeing the deity, you're not hankering to see some other material beautiful thing. You know, you shouldn't be anyway. So, and you're hearing beautiful sounds, the whole chanting of the holy name. Maybe a jamil is leading, you know, attracting the mind. Nice music. This incense smell is there. The nose is smelling. Even the touch, the flame comes around, right? Put it on your head. And then after the whole thing, the prasadam comes out. Isn't it? All the senses. The senses are always there, engaged. That's the whole idea. And they become purified. They become purified. Atak Shri Krishna Nama Adi Namave Grayam Indriyai Sevan Mukha Hisi Vajo Swayam Eva Spurotida. That with the present senses that we have, we cannot perceive really the real nature of the holy name, form, qualities, etc. of Krishna. But by beginning the service anyway, beginning with the tongue, jivado, eventually we become purified and Krishna reveals himself through those very same senses. You know, the senses become spiritualized. Another one, Prabhupada gives a little reference here, many of you may have missed it, to a verse about Lord Chaitanya by Prabodhananda Saraswati. This idea that the senses are like serpents, you know. So they can bite you. You know, a serpent may be just lying in the grass. It looks pretty harmless, you know, nothing. But only rears up and it bites you. So any of the senses, if they're not controlled, any one of them, as Krishna explains here, can take the mind away. And you're in the modes. You know, you forgot Krishna entirely. There's objects there for every one of our senses that can take us away from Krishna. So how to deal with that? You know, it seems like impossible. But this particular verse by Prabodhananda Saraswati in the Chaitanya Chandramrita describes these senses. Actually, it's a very deep verse. Prabhupada quoted, Kaivalyam nadakayate, tridashapur akasha pushpayate, durdandendriya kala sarpa patali prodkata dangstrayate, vishvam purna sukhayate, vidimahindra jishta kitayate, yatkarunya kataksa vaibhavapatam tam gaurame vastuma. So I glorify the golden avatar, Lord Chaitanya. One who is empowered by his sidelong glance due to service, you know, in other words, has gotten the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Here's what happens. Kaivalyam nadakayate. Now he's going through a list here. You know, there's a lot in this verse. Are you tempted to want to get liberation by merging into the Supreme? You just get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, and that'll be like going to hell. You won't be tempted at all. Kaivalyam nadakayate. Kaivalyam means merging. Losing your identity. Who wants that? In order for you to serve Krishna and experience bhakti rasa, you know, there has to be Krishna, there has to be you, and it has to be the process of devotional service. As soon as you merge into the absolute, whether it's Krishna's body, heaven forbid, or the Brahman refulgence, where's Krishna? Where are you? You know, where's the process of bhakti? It's gone. Better to be a devotee in hell than to merge into Brahman effulgence. So he says, Kaivalyam nadakayate. Then, Tridashapur akasha pushpayate. This is exactly what Krishna is describing in the morning class. Some of you are there, about the flowery words of the Vedas, describing the fruits, you know, of going to heaven and enjoying for so many millions of years, Nandana Kanana, with dancing nymphs, you know. Sounds good? No. Not if you've got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. It says it, Tridashapur akasha pushpa. It means that it's like a sky flower. Does anyone want to try to climb up in the sky? There's no such thing as a sky flower. Somebody's imagination. In other words, you couldn't care less. It doesn't mean anything for you. All of that striving to go to the heavenly planets or get good karma. Yeah. And then the next one is, Durdant Indriya. This is about the verse here. Durdant Indriya. Here's the Indriyas. Durdant means difficult to control. Durdandendriya kala sarpa is precisely the poisonous snake, right? Prodkata dangstra means that his teeth have been removed, the fangs have been removed. So the senses look the same, or the serpent looks the same. The cobra's there, rearing its head, but there's no fangs. You laugh at them. They can't really hurt you. So similarly, you have the tongue, you have the eyes, you have the ears and everything. But if you're saturated with Krishna consciousness by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then they can't hurt you. Meaning that they're spontaneously attracted to the service of Krishna and repulsed by Maya. You know? It's not that there's some attraction. There's no attraction. So they have their... And then it goes on. Vishram Purna Sukhayate. This whole universe, which we know philosophically and by our direct perception, is a place of misery and danger. You know? It's full of happiness for the devotee. Now, you have to understand this in context. He understands that people are suffering and he tries to bring them in Krishna consciousness. But for the devotee, he sees the Lord's pastimes everywhere. And so it's a place of happiness. You know, it's like that on, you know, when you do Harinam. You know, it's almost like, this is just like a dancing arena for us, you know. It's Fifth Avenue, there's horns honking and these people. But this is like, it's a place of pleasure pastimes. You know, when people are, you know, so stern, the poor guy, the homeless guy is wandering through the tree, you know, because he's not chanting. You know, it's his mind. Anyway, and then here comes the classic Prabodhananda. He says, Vidimahindra dishta kitayate. You know what that means? That even Vidhi, Brahma, and Mahindra, you know, the great Indra, are no more significant to him than insects. In other words, you respect them, but you don't worship them for anything. You know, it doesn't matter. So this is the means of control, going back to the senses, which is the key to it all, can be fully engaged in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. That's our means. Otherwise, we'll never be able to meet these simple verses, you know, withdrawing the senses whenever they... But this is the idea. Okay, there's no need for... I can't use this particular sense of Krishna service. Then you don't use it at all. You'd be happy using your other senses or your mind. At a certain point, the senses, you can't use them anymore. You're on your deathbed, imagine. But your mind is still active. You're still serving Krishna in your spiritual body. And so there's no fear. That's the ultimate acid test. The devotee dies without fear because it's like taking off an old coat. Is that frightful? That doesn't frighten you. It's only frightful, fearful, when you're completely identifying with it, and that's you. And that's, you know, and you can't withdraw your mind from it because that's all you know. Okay. Where are we now? 801. Okay. Now, the next verse is like really memorable. Yeah.
Just a comment. On books tonight, I was in OB, the farmer's market, and I met...
With the chanting party.
Yeah. We had some books within the markets as well. And these people told these people I met, they told me about a type of meditation they were trying. It called a sensory deprivation chamber.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of it.
I've definitely heard of it.
Oh, you've heard of it?
Yeah, I'm surprised you haven't heard of it till now. It's common.
They put you into a bath.
And they actually have tried that, yeah, yeah.
No, they couldn't give me a larger donation because they were on their way to go sensory deprived themselves. you get into like a
right, lukewarm, everything, yeah, right.
Same temperature as your body and try and space out.
It's completely artificial. Yeah, how long can you do that?
Yeah.
And then what are you thinking about? You know.
I told him to chant Hare Krishna.
Yeah, you don't have to deprive the senses. You know, fulfill the senses by connecting them to Krishna. You know. All right, let's go. Vishayavani Vartante. This is a really important verse. Everyone should memorize this verse. Vishayavani Vartante. Nirahara dehinaha. Rasa Vargam Rasopyasya. Padam drishtva nivartate. Though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. Purport. Unless one is transcendentally situated, it is not possible to cease from sense enjoyment. The process of restriction from sense enjoyment by rules and regulations is something like restricting a diseased person from certain types of eatables. The patient, however, neither likes such restrictions nor loses his taste for eatables. Similarly, sense restriction by some spiritual process like Ashtanga Yoga in the matter of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Adharana, Dhyana, etc. is recommended for less intelligent persons who have no better knowledge. But one who has tasted the beauty of the Supreme Lord Krishna in the course of his advancement in Krishna consciousness no longer has a taste for dead material things. Therefore, restrictions are there for the less intelligent neophytes in the spiritual advancement of life. But such restrictions are only good until one actually has a taste for Krishna consciousness. When one is actually Krishna conscious, he automatically loses his taste for pale things. And this, you know, this verse, I think that practically all of us can say, yeah, we experience that to some degree. If you're just told, if we just went out there, not as devotees, and just as, and so many people are doing this, give up meat eating. It's bad for you, and there's so many reasons why. It's a good thing to say. Give up meat eating because it's bad for your health, it's ethically reprehensible, it's ruining the planet. What other things? It's expensive. It's way too, all of these different reasons. Then you'll find a certain number of people who may listen to you and try to give it up, and some may succeed and become vegetarians. But if and I've read about this, there's so many vegetarians who are just vegetarians on one of those bases, mostly health, who they come to the point of, yeah, I used to be a vegetarian, or I tried it for a while. Or, whatever, like that. Because they didn't get a higher taste. They didn't, they may have tried some vegetarian. I mean, I remember when I first became a vegetarian, I knew nothing about Krishna consciousness, and I just thought, okay, I got to do just vegetables. So I got the steamer. What are they? The fast steamer. What do they call it? Pressure cooker. And I threw in a bunch of couscous, I think, rice, and some carrots, and some broccoli. And 3 minutes later, I had that. Didn't offer it or anything. I said, well, maybe I need some salt. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. And then I said, well, I need something else. So I had a bunch of cheese and dates. And I got completely sick. You can't mix all that together. So, you know, fortunately, that wasn't my only foray into vegetarianism. I met the devotees, and I was able to. But you could easily imagine that if I was trying to do it all on my own, that I would try it for a while and say, I can't do this, you know, and I'd go back to it, you know. So, the median. So the idea is that if you try to artificially withdraw the senses or renounce something, means that you know it's bad for you and you renounce it. I mean, back again to our drug, analogies. Or just take cigarettes. Prabhupada was fully aware how difficult that was to give up. Although he never experienced it, but he knew. And therefore, he didn't, in the early days, he said, okay, try to reduce one a day, you know. You know, Sharma Sundar was carving the Jagannath deities while he's smoking a cigarette. And Prabhupada, he frowned upon it. I think he gave that up there, but he didn't give it up entirely until later, you know. So what to speak of just ordinary people trying to give up tobacco, and there's millions and millions of them. You know, it's an addictive thing. So, but if you get the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, and prasadam is an important part of it, then it becomes easy, because if the taste isn't there, if the desire isn't there, then where's the austerity? It's no longer, is giving up meat eating really an austerity for anyone here? I mean, it's not an austerity because you don't want it. But someone who's like totally addicted to it, it'll be a very, it'll be a big thing for them. And that's true of everything. You know, even up to and including sex life. That's the main addiction. It's like built in to the human body. But that can be transcended, and you see in the greatest devotees. What was, the perfect example? Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was saturated with the holy name. You know, he's constantly chanting 300,000 names a day. It's practically inconceivable. 192 rounds, and completely absorbed. And so twice, actually, there was this story of, who was it, Ramchandra Puri? No, Ramchandra Khan, who was a Muslim, and he was in part of the ruling force there, where Haridas Thakur was. And he became envious, because Haridas Thakur was a converted Muslim. That in itself was like a big deal, And it may have been after they had already tried to kill him. They tried to execute him, because he had converted to the Hindu faith from the Muslim faith. That's a real no-no, right? So they couldn't do that. And he was protected by Krishna. I won't go into that story. So, but still, there was a lot of envy, because he was getting all this honor. And so this Ramchandra Khan, had a plan. He will send a prostitute in the middle of the night to seduce Haridas. He was a young man at the time. And, when he falls down, that'll damage his name and, no more fame for him. So he did that. Most of the prostitutes wouldn't do it because they had some piety. They saw it was not a good idea. But one agreed to do it. So she goes in the middle of the night. It's told in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anjali. So Haridas is there, in the evening time. He's a young man, he's chanting his rounds. And this young girl comes up, and, they do what prostitutes do. They try to allure, expose the body, this and that. Hare Krishna, welcome. Please sit. Get her a seat. Yeah. Oh, we need a chair. Too. Yeah. So, she's going there, and Haridas sees her, and she's saying, oh, you're so wonderful, handsome. I really like to be with you. And Haridas, he's very merciful. And he says, well, I've taken this vow to chant 10 million names this month, or something like that. And I'm nearing the end of my vow, so just sit there, and I'm almost through. And as soon as I'm done, we'll be together, no problem. She says, oh, okay, great, So she sits and sits, and she's listening to him chant. He's chanting, and the sun rises. So he apologizes. So I'm sorry, I really couldn't finish my chanting this night, but surely tomorrow. So you just come back. So she goes back to the Ramchandra Khan, and he says, what happened? And so she says, well, it's good news. You know, I didn't do anything. Nothing happened last night because he had to finish his chanting, but he promises that he's going to finish tonight and we'll be together. So, and then your desires will be fulfilled, she says to the Khan. So he's okay, great. So she goes back, and the same thing, he's chanting. She's sitting. So what to do? She's waiting for him to finish chanting. All right, might as well chant. So she starts chanting too. She's starting to get a little purified. So he's chanting, and the sun rises. So he says, oh, I'm really sorry, I just couldn't finish this. And so by this time, she's, you know, getting purified. So she goes back the third night, and, you know, she's chanting. And by the time the sun rises, she realizes what's happening. She offers her obeisance and says, oh, please forgive me. I came here, you know, to try to make you fall down, but you're such a great soul, this and that. And he said, look, I knew the whole plan. I stayed here just for your benefit, you know. So what happened was she became a disciple. She was initiated, and she said she didn't want to be a prostitute anymore. So that's okay. You just go to that little hut there. You just chant before the Tulsi tree, and everything will be taken care of. She became a famous devotee, and people would come and give her, you know, some boga and everything, and she would be taken care of. So this is, and it happened again, where Maya Devi herself personified came and tried to allure Haridas, just to prove his strength. Now that's the perfect example of Vishyava Nivartante, of this, you know, Param Drishtva Nivartante. So Param here means Krishna. When you see, the eyes stand for all the senses, when you experience Krishna directly, then you become completely enlivened. All your senses become saturated spiritually. And there's no question of any more desire for sense gratification. Just like a drug addict who's finally free of the drug and can be jubilant about it. There's no desire anymore. That's the only way you're really free of it, you know. So that's what's being spoken of here, is that you may give up something, but we know the desire is still there. So therefore, one has to practice a process by which the senses become, can perceive, can directly experience the param, this transcendental reality of Krishna, and be purified. Because we always have to remember, you know, never forget, that Krishna is all attractive. This is why he's God. He's attractive to everyone. He has all of the opulences, all the attractive features, in an unlimited degree. So all we need to do is perceive him, is to come in contact. Well, how do we do that? You know, we're so covered over. He comes to us. He makes himself accessible, chiefly through the holy name and his great devotees. The great devotees give us a medium by which we can come in contact with Krishna. And if we follow the instructions, you know, for chanting and hearing and behaving in the proper way, yes, there's an effort to control the senses. There has to be that effort. And simultaneously to engage the senses. You can't have one without the other. If you engage, but then don't make an effort to control, then, as I described earlier, it's like trying to start a fire while pouring water on it, you know. Or you're filling a pot, but poking holes in it, you know. You don't make any progress. So the effort has to be there to control the senses and engage them in Krishna's service, and then Krishna responds by giving you nectar, you know, more and more realization. And you can move on to a higher platform and make progress that way. He responds to our efforts. He realizes how disqualified we are, Kali Yuga, but we still have to make some effort, and Krishna will respond. So this is a great verse to understand. Let's see, anything? Yeah, it's a short purport. Any discussion on these points? A minute or two. What do we got? Okay, let's do the... No, we can't do 60. 60 has a lot in it. Because he's 60 goes, he goes back. And he says, even if you're striving, watch out, because even one of those senses, the mind gets focused on, it'll take you away. So you have to. So we'll leave that for another day. I'm going away for the weekend. I'm going to be in Las Vegas. I'm going to visit the center there and Flagstaff, where our old friend Alex is situated. I'm driving. So will you wish me? I have never driven that far. Well, I did. I drove across the country once when I was a kid, but that was another thing. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. How do you know?